Hello, it's Michelle.
Hello, Michelle.
Yes.
Hi, it's Jeremy Shapiro again.
How are you?
Feeling pretty stupid, actually. How are you doing?
Fine.
Good. Well, I changed some of the questions so we wouldn't sound too repetitive or bored with each other.
It's
Yeah. And welcome, of course, to Stir the Pots
okay.
for a second time.
Well, I'm very popular, so I'm high demand.
I told you, see? Actually, this morning when I was re-researching more information, I was looking at your book, which I bought a while back, and stupidly, I buy so many books that I barely have time to read them. I was reading the preface today, and I just wondered, how did you manage to turn full circle from a dropout in school at 14 to where you are today? And was it because of the métier?
The what I find out is that first of all, I didn't choose because I was inspired, but I mean, I chose because I didn't want to be a mechanic, a plumber, electrician, and I figured I was calculated to say, okay, what's the best way to travel and find a job, especially at that time in France. You had to do 1 year army. And I belong to a big family, nine kids. So I keep hearing I'm number eight. So I keep hearing my brothers say, "Well, the guy who got it good is the cook and the pastry chef because they have good food and they're always staying warm." So I said, "That's for me." So. So I choose that and also love, I always loved to see my mother cook, and she was a great cook because we were a blue collar, very very blue collar, and she had to feed the nine kids. So it was, you have to have some imagination in order to have some good food on the table and not spend too much money.
Yeah. And did you start straight in a pastry shop or a boulangerie?
No, actually, I have both certificate. I have a chef. I started as a chef first, and because the so I passed my exam to become to be a chef. I was apprenticed for 3 years, and then after I finished my 3 year, I passed my exam. I was inspired by the pastry, so I took another year as a for pastry, and I passed my exam as an independent because I could do that because I was 17, so we could do, and I passed that one also. I was lucky. I went to a pure only pastry shop, in confiserie. It was not bakery and in pastry, and I was had a great chef and. I was very involved there every day. So, passed the exam. I came second in the nation
Wow.
when I passed it, and I stay on it after that. Went back a little bit on the kitchen after my exam, but I look around at that time. I was already at a 2-star Michelin. I look around and I see all those chefs at that time was. Pretty burnout and or divorce or so I look at it and I said it's not for me. I don't think I can handle that type of life. So I walk away from that the kitchens per se and then went to the pastry where I enjoy more the philosophy of the pastry chef or the baker.
So the cooking and pastry are completely different in a lot of ways, then.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Two different personalities too. I mean, the chef is a little more like, in the kitchen you have so much rush and also you work, especially in France, you work almost 14 hours or more every day because you go in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, you start to sometimes go to the market and prepare stuff for lunch and then. Around 2:30, you go home and you come back around 5, and you finish at midnight. So,
Wow.
as a life, as for family, it's not very very good. As a pastry chef, you get up very early. Yes, but you're home for dinner. You still have a life with the family. So it's you create a different different atmosphere and your lifestyle, because the chef sometimes, the cook, you go out sometimes with the waiter, who's got the pocket full of tip cash to spend.
And you spend his money.
You spend his money because he wants you to take care of him when he has a special customer.
Oh, of course. And how did you then get into bread baking?
Bread baking came because I got a position as a pastry chef at Barrier at that time, and he was the only restaurant in France at that time who was doing bread. And the person behind that was Professor Calvel. Then he was coming to experiment some bread, make unique bread for Charles Barrier. So since I was a pastry chef, then I was also responsible of the bread section. So I ended up getting involved with the bread and start to learn and get re-enjoy that part of it, which is more mystic and challenging than pastry. Pastry is, you have the skill, but you have all the components. If you follow that, you more or less know what the result be. With the bread is always a challenge to control, to make sure you're under control and the dough is going to give you what you expect.
And do you think that the restaurant environment makes for a good bread, or is it just a one in a million chance that you were lucky enough to have such great teachers?
Oh, no, I was very lucky. I mean, in France, we were the only, at that time, we were the only restaurant that was making his own bread. And Barry decided to do that because he couldn't get the bread he wanted. And I'm talking, it was in 75. So he was already ahead of the game at that part because he felt like the bread was not unique for a fine diner.
So the bread was already in decline in France by that point.
Yeah, and also, asking a typical French baker to put some walnut or some other component in the bread at that time was like, you tell him, your wife is ugly, it was an insult almost to ask him to do something like that. And Barrier want to have a different bread. To the point that even Calvel was a very classic. Love to go to Barrier because he had the chance to experiment. And I still remember one day he decided to experiment on fermentation with pineapple, and we had a surprise the morning when the dough was all over the floor.
Well, you decided to come to the States to travel. Was it your intention to come in to bake, or what was your plan after you landed on our shores?
First, I came because I was young and I have nothing to lose, and kind of stubborn. I'm from Brittany, so people from Brittany have a reputation to be stubborn. So a lot of people say, "Well, America, nobody stay there. Is a place where it's no good food." And one day I say, "I'll go to America," and say, "Oh, you won't last more than a week because you won't like that." And the only thing you're gonna come back one guy told me, "The only thing you're gonna come back with." The pack of Marlboro. So the more that people would tell me negative stuff, the more I say, okay, I'm going it. And then I decided to, I saved some money. I had $300 in my pocket and in the backpack, and I just came. I came to check it out, to see, okay, what is the big talk about that country? So I landed in New York. One thing I didn't realize, this country is so big. I mean, when you come from Europe, you have no idea how big the country is. You thought you're going to travel a little longer than France, but not take almost a week to cross the U.S. So I got my big surprise, and we landed because I came at that time with a good friend of mine, and today she's my wife. So we landed in New York. I didn't speak English, and she barely spoke English. And we landed there, and then we took a ground bus, and we went to Philadelphia. And it was a Thanksgiving time. It was freezing outside. We didn't know it'd be that cold. And the first food we tried was a pretzel, because we saw people were eating pretzel, and they seemed to enjoy it. And I said, "Oh, it must be good." So. So we went to the little cart and we bought some pretzel, and the guy put mustard on it, the typical mustard you put on it. We
Yeah.
tried to eat that, and we got a shock of our life. I said, how could you eat that mustard? Because we were expecting mustard, like mustard from Dijon, the hard, strong
Not the
mustard.
German
And that,
style.
yeah.
Yeah.
So we got a little shock on that one. And the second one, we got shocked. We were looking for something to drink, and we saw root beer. And we didn't know anything about root beer. And so it looked like, so Evelyn said, that's beer. I said, okay, let's take that. And we got a shock there also because we had no clue of the flavor of that thing. I said, wow, just like medicine that we can drink. So we politely and very discreetly disposed of those food. That was one of the experiences we had.
Yeah, my mother, when she first came to America, she cooked really good food, and going to a supermarket was a shock. She said, "There's no shallots, there's no leeks. What do they have here?" Yeah.
Yeah, shallots was for us at the beginning, shallots was a treasure to
Yeah.
find it.
And what made you come back to go to San Francisco eventually?
Well, I landed in Philadelphia, and then some people I knew from France say, go see that guy, he's going to give you a job. So I landed in Philadelphia, and I think it's the White Dove or something. It was a restaurant was looking for somebody. They want to hire me on the spot, and I said, well, I came to travel a little bit. So we jumped on the ground bus, and with the ground bus we end up in Chicago. And Chicago was Jean Blanchet there, and then there's Ritz-Carlton. All those people want me to work there, and I said, well, I need to go back to France first. So I came back and work in Chicago. Actually, I work in Chicago there. And what I did there is I worked with a very simple restaurant, and I'll enjoy it actually to work there because I discovered it was so much opportunity to do.
And was there something different about the way work was being done here in the States in the business than it was in France? Was it more restrictive in France?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, here they give you freedom 100%, and that's what I love about this country is the freedom you have. It's no strict regulation on your creation and inspiration. So that's what took me. I mean, this is the place I wanted to stay.
When you started your business TMB, how did that come about?
TMB is, to answer your first question, how I ended up in San Francisco. So after I worked in Chicago, I bought a Volkswagen van, and I said, okay, to Evelyn, I said, we promised us to visit U.S. So we bought a Volkswagen van camper, and we traveled for 9 months all around U.S. We did all the state up and down. And so we ended up from San Diego all the way up to Vancouver. And then we came down, and in San Francisco we kind of ran out of money, so we stopped in San Francisco. And at that time was the movement of the bread, because I look around and there was Acme already existed for his first store, and then Boudin, and they have some fairly decent bread happening. And I love San Francisco as a city, and the ocean is right there. So that's it. It's a city I want to stay. So we stay there. And then in the beginning, I did some consulting for people who wanted to improve the formula or start a business. But the main thing I did is improve formula and process, and also go from a small bakery to larger bakery. And my first customer was Steve Sullivan, and after that was Nancy Silverstone. So from there is where I start my career as a consultant. And then through my supporter to do all those setup and improvement of process and also increasing volume, it was of course a necessity to have some equipment to do that. And the equipment at that time was very limited available here. And also the price was very high. And I knew some source in Europe to where the equipment was available and more economic to buy it. So I made the connection with those people and those customer, and we start to bring equipment for customer like Acme, Nancy, and so on. And TAB became, a business who evolved by himself. And I was still doing consulting, going through place, doing so layout for bakery, and helping out processing and selecting equipment, regardless if they bought from the TMB or somebody else, or just help them selection where TMB came up.
And then that transitioned into your creating the San Francisco Baking Institute.
Correct. Then the because of the consulting again was really a more or less reserved to a certain customer level financially, I realized one some very tiny bakery could not afford to have somebody to come on a one-to-one basis, and also I realized it was a lot of young people who have no chance to learn the trade, and at that time the only school available in the U.S. was AIB, which is American Institute of Baking, but at that time, we were focused more on large production like pan bread and that type of bread. So, for a small bakery owner or somebody want to go there, even at that time, the culinary school didn't do anything on baking. The movement was not up there. So I saw necessity. So we decided again with Evelyn to open on our own small bakery school, the San Francisco Baking Institute, in '96, the same year my daughter was born. So.
And what is the basis of your program? I mean, how do you create a school or start an educational kind of system like you have there?
The way we create, first of all, we want to bring the student who come here already student, very mature, and they want to be here. That's the average of ages between 20, let's say 22 to let's say 45, and sometime more. We have some people who come in the 65 because we have serious hobby baker, we call a home baker, who come and they. So the curriculum is first very intense in the sense that we try to duplicate the theory we teach in class to the practice. And we try to apply it, not a formula. We're not here to teach you how to make the best baguette. We're here to, our focus is to teach you what could make a good baguette, what could make a bad baguette. And you go out with those tools in hand to go back home and actually expand on your own by getting those observations and be able to correct whatever problem you could have it. That's really our focus to bring up people to speed where they should know about flour quality, if you overmix on the mix, if you shape too tight, or if you overproof, underproof, all those is where our focus is. And then that's for the artisan one. Artisan two, we bring it up, we start to do different pre-ferment, liquid starter, you create your own starter. So same thing, we don't give you something already made, you make your own starter from ground up. So that way you understand how to do that if you want to do it again at home or back in your shop. So all those is really focused on understanding rather teach you a formula.
And what's the advantage of taking your full-time course at your school opposed to like job training or even like workshops that are offered at different places?
But the advantage I mean, if I can say the advantage is, first of all, it's very intense. And job training, definitely you can go on a job, but in the job, the beauty of the job is you're going to go, let's say, to use a name as an example, you're going to go to Acme. Well, Acme, they do one way. You go to La Brea, they do another way. You go to Sammy Freddy, for instance, you go to, and then all those bakery does baguette, but they have a different process. Well, so you learn that process, and you're going to go to another bakery later on. You learn the other process, but that don't mean you'll be able to jump in and do right away because you don't understand the first basis. That's the advantage to come to a class here. Even if you don't take the long program, the short program, 5-day program, you learn all those. The long program is a little bit more intense than a 5-day program because They're here for 18 weeks. So we go a little deeper, and we repeat also, and we cover lots of different bread that we don't cover on the 5-day program because it's too short.
What's your
What's your
definition of
definition
a
of an
artisan baker?
artist? Well, the artisan baker is a hard word to define because there's so many people now use artisan as a trademark to sell a product as an artisan. For me, artisan, the first and the most is no exception, no chemical whatsoever used in there. And the fermentation has to be slow fermentation. Is no, it cannot be no time though, meaning that from the time you mix to the time you in the oven is about 3 hour max, and sometimes even less than that because they boost the yeast amount in order to go through it. Artisan bread is to respect the quality and the property of the flour and let it rise by itself without pushing it. That's really the artisan. Now after that, you get some people who say, well, artisan should be done on the hand. Not really. If you do with the machine and you have a machine that doesn't abuse the dough, you can actually do a good job also.
And some
And
people also think it should just be sourdough rather than hybrid or yeast or,
yeah,
yeah.
correct. I mean, some people say, well, artisan bread should be fed with only starter or levain or stiff starter. Yeah, it's possible, but commercial yeast is actually, when we say commercial yeast, it's actually the same thing as a levain. Nothing wrong with it. A very sweet, what they call a sweet baguette or a Parisian baguette, is made with a commercial yeast, and you won't be able to do a Parisian baguette without that, okay? Because you end up with a sour baguette, and it's not light, and you cannot taste the wheat flavor if you don't have the yeast in there. It's impossible.
And that's pretty
Because
much where the baguette was when it first started, I guess, in Paris. That's what they were using was yeast with a pouliche or something.
correct, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing stops you to use, and definitely we used to. You need to use pouliche or pré-ferment, tapa dough, either fermented dough or anything. You added that to your baguette to give you flavor, but you cannot use only that as a ferment because it'll start to change the flavor of the wheat. You want that flavor, the wheat, especially on the baguette, is when you're capable to balance that with a proper fermentation, not overpower the yeast. I mean, it's the same thing. You need to have a proper usage, then you have a great, great Parisian baguette.
And why is the baguette considered the icon of French baking, and why is it so difficult to make?
Well, it's first of all, it's the most humble bread you can have because it has no makeup on it. It's just plain water, flour, yeast, and salt. That's it. Nothing else. You can add some thyme, wheat germ in order to give a little nutty flavor, but basically it's all it is. And then you're dealing with the dough that's very, very lean with the ingredient, but you're dealing with a shape whose, if you don't know how to shape it, you have the most difficult to obtain open grain, open the cell structure on the crumb, and also your scoring and when you cut it to be perfect. So the shaping, where the challenge is to be able to pick up the dough when it's ready, to be shaped, and shape it properly, uniformly from one end to the other end, and do a proper scoring. That's where it's become complicated. It's the only way to do is constantly repeat and observe and repeat it until you get the proper baguette.
So you think
So
there's
you think
a
there's
terroir in
terroir
baking
in
then?
baking? Oh yes.
We talked last time we
Last time
spoke
we
about
spoke
the
about
Bread
the Bread
Bakers
Bakers
Guild,
Guild.
and I
And
wondered, would there
would
ever be
there
a
ever be a
chance to
chance to
have
have
a guild
a
like
guild like
that,
that,
like in
like
Europe,
in Europe,
more in their
more in their
standard, how they
standard, how
have
they have
uniformity,
uniformity,
better
more better
education,
education
and for
for
bakers?
bakers? You mean in Europe or in
No,
the
here in the
No, here in the
States.
Yeah, but I must say that we have Bread Baker Guild of America, and I think I support it because you have Baker inside that group. The direction they take sometimes, I must say, I don't 100% approve it because they go to some level where some other people cannot follow, meaning that especially the younger generation cannot follow. They cannot afford to go to the seminar because they're too expensive. But it does exist if you want, but we need to bring it down to the average people and have people a little bit more involved. And the only way you can get the people involved is to do a little bit more by region rather to be national like we have here. So, of course, in Europe it's a lot more easy because one city you have like 200 bakery, so you get a lot more member involved and you have more people can share the knowledge here. Sharing the knowledge, only a few people really can help, and they're not always available, or they demand so many times nobody wants to ask them anymore. But I wish one day we'll come to that. I'm putting together and pushing hard to do an internship more often because we have lots of young people who come out of school and they're begging to have an internship somewhere. And people are intimidated by the internship because they don't know what to do with an intern. So my goal is really to put an intern program so that way the owner doesn't have to think it. It's just follow the intern program so that way per week or per day they have so many things to do it based on what they want to study. So that way the intern will learn experience and the owner will have a good help and we bring the standard again up and also we're creating a source of a qualified people. Which we're missing right now. So.
And do you think
And do
there's
you think there's
a reason
a
that they
reason that they
focus so much
focus
on
so
the
much
Coupe
on the
de
Coupe de
Monde Boulangerie?
Boulangerie? I think they focus on that because it's for them is the Coupe du Monde de Boulanger is good because you raise the bar and you attract again young people to see oh you need to bring something in the end for people to be interesting if you're the baker who makes donuts every day, it's nothing challenging for a young mind to go there. If you see somebody to go and get so much glamour and success, then they get attracted and they want to go there. But definitely the Coupe du Monde is a good thing. And I think the guild focus for me, the guild, America guild focus too much on it. And I know why they do that is because they bring money. Lots of sponsors give a lot of money for it. But if you look back, all that money going to that. So this is like a vicious circle. You don't know. If we didn't have that, then we didn't spend the money. Maybe we could use the money for something else. So.
Yeah. And do you
And
think
do you think
that's
that's
the reason
the
why there
reason
aren't
why there
more
aren't
small
more small
bakeries,
bakeries
in
in
cities or
cities or?
towns?
No, I think the more bakery and small cities in town is due to success of a very good baker who took the guts and went and did it. You get some bakery like Acme, for instance, is a good example. Of course, you have some wholesale bakery, but they have some retail. And people look at it and see they can visualize what they can do. And then you have in the city, you have Tartine. That's a great example. You have in New York, it's not really a full shop, but you have Balthazar is a good example. So you have more and more small bakery happening in the city because also the way of living of people have changed also. They don't drive as much as they used to be. And people try to live in the city rather to live outside. So the bakery is back to routine life of people, which I really, really supported.
Do you think that
Do you
the
think that the
current
current
economic
economic
downturn
downturn
will
will
make
make
baking,
baking
have problems with their
problems with their
standards of
standards of
quality? Will
quality will
people kind of
kind of
take
take
shortcuts?
short? I don't think so. I mean, the people looking for quality still remain with quality because it's been an alert that the quality of the food that we've been consuming here in Europe is a problem for the health. So I think a lot of people, the consumer who buy quality bread know about it, and they will cut down one fancy dinner, and I don't think they will cut down the basic food, which is bread.
How does somebody
How does
create a
somebody create
recipe?
a... Well, they need to start first with the objective of what they want as a flavor. So, if they want a white bread, then you use definitely a white flour. And then you need to study your first. I mean, at least try to find out your first base of ingredient percentage. So, from there, if you have your first percentage base, then you start to build it. So let's say white flour will, typical bread flour will use, let's say, 65% water absorption. So that's your first base. On salt, it'll go between 1.5 to 2.2%. Yeast is 0.0, 0.5. That's the average, and you can go point less than that. And then when you have that, then you start to see how far you want to push your water up. See how soft you want it based on the crumb. If you want more open crumb, then you increase your water. If you want it tighter, you decrease your water. And when you have that, then if you want to add pre-ferment, then the same thing. You need to understand what those pre-ferments are going to bring it to you and how far can you go. Because the pre-ferment could be very good, but it could be reverse of what you achieve in the end. Because if you, let's say, you use Pulish and you go above, let's say, 50% Pulish in it, and if you have a bad, let's say, a weak flour to use on the final dough, that Pulish is going to create some issue to you, right? So let's say Pulish, I will say it's 40%. I won't go above that. Liquid starter, if you want to use starter, but you don't want to have the flavor, you just want to use the starter for, it's just a tang flavor and give it elasticity and also extend your shelf life. I'll say 20% is the maximum you go. You can go down from 20 down and up. If you want sour, then you can go up to 40% also. So all those is very basic number you start with it. And after that, you can add component of different flour you want it to bring flavor to your bread. After you get those bases and you experiment it, then you see what happened, then you try to, you push later. And of course, from those, when we just talk, we talk on the mixture, the composition. Now, after that, you need to understand your flour time, your bench
Fermentation
time,
process.
yeah, fermented process to see how those will react to it and how long you should mix it also. You make an intense mix or a very, 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 very different flour will react with the mixing you're gonna bring to it. So it's important to know all those parameter, and then when you have that, then you get all the tool to create anything you want on bread. It's fun too.
Yeah.
Don't learn from the result in the end. Learn as you go. That's really what I keep saying to any student. Learn as you go. Learn everything you do. If you mix that long, observe what you did it. If you proof a little longer, observe what you did. The temperature will come out. Observe it. The temperature, I mean, just to remind people, 74, 76 is a good temperature of dough coming out, standard dough. 80 and up for a sour, very sour dough, right out overnight. So, all those, you need to observe those and you'll see you evolve. And it's like you, for me, the creating a bread is just like going after hunting for a treasure. And you're not going to find it the first time, but the day you find it, it's going to be a beautiful loaf, full of flavor, full of the crumb you wanted and the crust. So
And there's
don't be
always
impatient.
a happy
Happy
accident
accident
sometimes.
sometimes. Yeah, that is most of the formula have been created like that.
Just remember to write everything down.
That's it. And it's don't stress out if it doesn't come out. It's fun. Make it fun. Like you try to find the problem. The problem with lots of people, they get discouraged the first time because they forget to observe as they go. And the change, if you do that, if you mix, let's say, for 3 minutes, okay, I'm going to try to mix maybe for 5 minutes and see. So you evaluate every time what happened to it. And that's the beauty of the making bread is you don't have a very firm guidance how to do it. You can create anything you want.
So in some ways it's not as restrictive as pastry in a sense, because that's really, you have to really follow
Yeah. Right.
The rules. And cooking, there it's really like loose. You can pretty much cover up most things except taking out salt if you make a
Yeah,
mistake.
correct, correct. I
Yeah.
mean, but even cooking, if you forgot to put the salt, you can put it right at the last minute.
Yeah.
Well, if you forgot the salt and the bread, the last minute is too late because you're already consuming the bread. So
Well, you just sell it as Tuscan bread then.
that's it.
Yeah.
It's which is a very complex bread to make because making bread without salt is not easy.
No. How do you archive formulas and traditions of bakers that are pretty much disappearing? I was in Switzerland a while ago with my sister, and she was telling me about a bakery where a baker had given up his business. He was too old, and nobody wanted to take it over. And she said, "Oh, and they had the most wonderful recipes." So how do we go about saving those places, that those traditional places that are going by the wayside?
That's the one of the sad story actually in the U.S. because you had, and I tried many years ago. I tried to actually through the retail bakery RBA, Retail Bakery Association, to bring that up. I said, look, we have some very old baker who disappearing every day,
Yeah.
and the new generation right now is pump with pre-mix and frozen and stuff like that. Nobody know all those formula. They're gonna disappear. And every time I have an old baker, and if they want to share for us to have the formula, and we'll share them and we archive them so that way we keep them as precious as we can. But I definitely agree with you. Is lots of talent and knowledge is going to waste because nobody
Yeah.
is there to take it. It's too bad. And
And how do you
how
think
do you think
home
home
bakers and
bakers and
bloggers,
bloggers,
micro
micro
bakeries help
bakeries
the
help the
profession grow?
profession? I mean, the first thing it does help. It helps to bring the customer. I mean, it's the people who surf the web and they see all those products, and they go to their own retail bakery and local bakery and try to see if that product exists. And if lucky enough, that product exists, and most of the time they exist because it's a new. The movement of new product is almost happening at the same time. So it supports the industry just by exposing people to new product. That's the first. And also it bring p value to somebody who wants to know more than they can go to school. And we have some blogger, they come here. It's very interesting to see because they come here and then you go on later on the blog and you see the product they made here is actually down there. So it's very, very good. I mean, I definitely support that.
And
How do you
feel about
feel
like
about
par
like par
baking and
baking and
wholesale
wholesale
bakeries kind
bakeries
of
kind of
pushing out the
pushing out
smaller
the smaller
bakeries? Will is there
bakeries?
still a
Is there
lot of
still a lot
space
of
left
space left
for small bakeries?
Definitely. I mean, if the smaller bakery make it a outstanding, a better product than whatever the par baker can do it, he's got a chance, especially if accessible and is a service, customer service oriented, customer will support them. I mean, it's no doubt about it. The par baker is one way to delivery bread everywhere to better quality than the frozen bread. Why is that? Because par baker was one way to produce bread, if we can call it artisan, meaning that's no chemical, no preservative, no emulsifier, no nothing in there. So it was the only way to produce bread in that level and be able to ship all over U.S. and be able to deliver bread in Boise or deliver bread in the middle of the country where no bakery will open there because they don't have enough customer. But as the real estate, let's say in California and some of this state went up, some business move out. They move out and they move with the people. So those people moved with it and they're looking for the same bread they used to have. And at that time, par baker was the only way to get. If, let's say, in a small town, you get a small bakery who start to do the same similar bread, actually, it'll benefit from the advertisement of those par baker slash artisan bread, because if he does a better bread, then the rest of that population in that town will get educated from the supermarket to eat that type of bread. And if that retail does a good job, he should get the business. I know a lot of time people want to go to the supermarket and buy everything there, but if you create a brand name, the supermarket are not dummy. They ask you to come and actually bring the bread to their supermarket because they don't want. The point of destiny is bread, okay? Supermarket, you can find the same beans, you can find the same rice, you can find everything. The one thing to distinguish one supermarket from the other is the type of bread they have it, especially from local bread produced by a bakery.
Well, and there's
Well,
always
and
the
there's
smell
always
of
the
the
smell
bakery
of the
when you
bakery
walk
when you
by.
walk by. Yeah,
Good
definitely.
good
Good
advertising.
advertising. Yeah, public doesn't smell.
Yeah. I was gonna ask
Was
you
gonna
because
ask you because
I worked in a
I
few
worked in a few
bakeries
bakeries
and
and
late
late
overnight
overnight
baking is
baking
pretty
is pretty
brutal.
brutal.
What's
Yeah.
the
The
lifespan of a
lifespan of a
baker or
baker or
for in terms
in
of a
terms of a
career?
career. I mean, it's some people love love to work during the night. I mean, it's definitely if you don't do that every day, then it's kind of hard. But some people love it to do that because it's. I don't know if you see, but you go there. It's almost a different planet when you go in the middle of the night to work. It's very quiet. You have less noise of the city. But some people they work as long as anybody else. Especially now, I mean, it's not as hard as it used to be, where they used to be working in the basement and working very hard with minimum
Equipment.
comfort and equipment. So
Yeah.
now they can work and be comfortable. It's not as fast life and be in the kitchen and drinking coffee in order to keep up with the waiter, keep pumping your order at you.
Yeah, and
Yeah, and then
your feet
your
start to
feet
give
start
out
to give
after a
out after
while,
a
and your
while.
knees
Yeah,
get
your knees get
old.
old.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well,
Well,
I don't want to
I don't
take up
want to
more
take
of
up
your
more
time
of your
since I
time
already
since I
spoke
already
to you
spoke to you before.
before.
That's okay. No, don't worry about it. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
Not a problem.
thank you very
Thank you
much
very
again
much
and
again
again.
and again. No problem, man. We hope to see you one of these days.
Definitely.
Definitely. Okay.
Thanks
We'll
very much.
make bread.
Okay,
Okay,
excellent.
excellent. Take care.
Okay, au revoir.
Au revoir.